Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning, January 19th. It's the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Hope you're enjoying a day off. Right now, we've got 22 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 23 degrees at the airport. On the phone with a look at the weather, we have meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Your forecast is going to call for plenty of sunshine out there across the area. We're going to be dealing with temperatures at or slightly above average as we look at high temperatures climbing into the upper 30s in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the lower 40s in the Heber Valley. As we move into your Monday night, look for temperatures to dip down into the teens with clear skies. It's going to be a frigid one out there for you. We could also start to see a little patchy haze developing, but overall should be mostly clear. Now, as we go throughout your Tuesday, look for sunshine in Park City. We'll see those highs warming into the low 40s. You'll be climbing into the mid-40s in the Heber Valley, but again, we'll call it hazy sunshine expected as we go into your Tuesday as that high pressure reestablishes itself and tries to build in a little bit more of that inversion haze. By the time we get towards your Wednesday, look for plenty of sunshine in Park City. We'll see those highs jumping into the mid-40s out there for us. Meanwhile, across the Heber Valley, we're looking at highs jumping into the upper 40s, but again, we'll start to notice that haze a lot more developing once again across the region. By the time we get towards your Thursday, we'll have a few extra clouds beginning to build up, so we'll call it partly cloudy in Park City. High temperatures climbing into the mid-40s. We'll call it upper 40s in the Heber Valley, again with the hazy sky and a few extra clouds trying to build up during the day. Now, as we move into your Friday, we'll call it partly to mostly cloudy skies across the Wasatch Back. There is going to be a weak disturbance moving through, and especially by Friday afternoon into Friday evening, there will be a slim chance that we could see a couple of isolated snow showers developing. Now, right now, this system does not like it's going to have any real meaningful moisture or anything that's going to produce anything significant, but this could bring us some areas a little dusting of snow potentially as we get towards your Friday night into Saturday. But again, right now, the chances of seeing anything significant with this system, very slim. Overall, temperatures in the upper 30s to low 40s through the weekend. That's a look at the latest forecast with the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And with a look into the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Greg. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Yeah, I hate to be on the train here of continued bad news. You know, the weather certainly looks bleak. I guess it's good news because we don't have avalanches to report. So, we've had a low avalanche danger for a long time, and we're expecting it to remain that way through this coming week. There are some things going on with the snowpack, though, and we did hear of a hint of possibly a few snow showers later this coming week, and we're starting to see some signs maybe of a pattern change, but it may not happen till February. So for now, continuing with low avalanche danger, there was an uptick in winds overnight, so I would not be surprised for people who get out into the upper elevations, into exposed alpine terrain, to see a few fresh wind drifts, but I don't think the problem is widespread enough to increase it from low to moderate. So yeah, we're sticking with a low danger. One thing I did yesterday, I'm encouraging people who are getting out still, is great time to practice companion rescue. So beacon, shovel, probing, however you're traveling, whether it's on skis or a snowmobile, you can practice this stuff easily. It's great time to do that. We do have good snow coverage, so you can set up some realistic scenarios. So yeah, I'm encouraging people to, you know, look in different ways, perhaps, and practice rescue techniques. When it does snow again, the last thing anyone's going to want to do is practice rescue. So good time to do it now. Take advantage of the great weather. And, we'll hope for snow and sometime in the future.
Okay. Thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay tuned. In just a minute, we'll be checking in with Deputy Summit County Manager Jana Young. She'll have a preview of this year's legislative session that starts tomorrow. Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher, along with Programs Director Heather Sims, in with an update on our youth sports programs, and from the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District Director Robert Parrish with an update on some of their programs and projects for 2026. The annual 45-day legislative session opens tomorrow in the studio with a preview of some of the themes and bills that Summit County is watching. I have Deputy County Manager Jana Young. Good morning, Jana.
Good morning, Leslie.
So is legislative watch one of your duties as Deputy County Manager?
Yes, this is my ninth session. So I feel like I have a lot of battle scars over the years. I am the liaison between the county and the legislature. I actually have created an internal working group because it takes a village to be able to track everything that's going on down there. And that group meets weekly and we discuss bills and we go to the Capitol and we participate in the Utah Association of Counties and work with our lobbyists. It's really kind of a full court press for those 45 days. So we really understand what's going on and can advocate for our community.
Yeah, who does that internal working group include?
So all of the elected offices, so, you know, like our auditor, our treasurer, our clerk, those folks, sheriff, and then a number of department directors that tend to see a lot of legislative activities. So our planning department, our health department, sustainability, economic development, those folks. And it's probably about, I mean, close to 30 of us that participate in this, if you count our lobbyists as well. And then our friends at High Valley Transit participate in that too. So, what's nice about that is everyone can kind of track their area of expertise and then share information with me. And I try to keep track of everything and then communicate with our lobbyists, or we'll actually call legislators when we have a concern or a question. It's a really effective process.
Yeah, now does the county put out some kind of public tracker that the rest of us can kind of watch?
We don't do that, although I do give updates every Wednesday to the county council. So if folks are interested in learning what we're tracking, we definitely go over bills during that meeting, and that's a public meeting.
Okay, those are the bills that you know about, because, as you know, over 9 years, that you're always surprised.
Absolutely. It's amazing. Even when we have all of these fingers and networks, it's amazing how we still miss things. Even our friends at Utah Association of Counties sometimes will get surprises. So, it's turned into a fast and furious with volume of bills. It didn't used to be that way. It used to be a lot more collaborative, a lot more slow. Now it's made it really difficult for, I think, the public and everyone to keep track of everything.
Well, as I mentioned, you have put together some themes for this year's session. Maybe you can just run through those. What are they?
Yeah, I think that's helpful preview because it paints really what we might see in terms of bills. And what we're hearing coming out of both the House and the Senate caucuses are themes around affordability and the cost of living in Utah. I think we're all kind of feeling the pinch day-to-day living here. And specifically in that area, they're looking at housing affordability, childcare, cutting taxes, and lowering gas prices. We also anticipate bills in the infrastructure realm, specifically water, with an emphasis on protecting the Great Salt Lake, as well as energy, which also feeds into the water conversation, because Utah is hoping to be the location for a lot of those large data centers, which require a lot of water and energy. So they're looking at creating industry in some of those alternative energy sources, also reducing traffic and securing critical minerals. There's also a theme around restoring representative government, which they take to mean as election integrity, transparency in government, also around the judiciary. As you recall, the last couple of years, there's been quite a few battles between the legislature and the courts around ballot initiatives and referenda and the redistricting conversation. So we expect to see more about in that area. And then also every year, the state budget, it takes center stage at the legislature. They start this from day one and work on it throughout the whole session. And what we're hearing this year is that the state budget will be pretty flat, particularly due to a reduction in federal funding. And so we expect to see the legislature cutting government spending, as well as finding ways to mitigate that federal uncertainty, which of course will have impacts for us at the local level, because we get a lot of pass-throughs through the state, and we've also lost federal funding. So then we look to the state to kind of help fill those gaps. So we'll be watching those conversations and that budget process really closely.
All right. And these things are very interesting, and I feel solid. I mean, that's what government should do. But then we hear about all of the anti-LGBTQ plus rhetoric coming from Representative Trevor Lee, for an example. And I guess you don't have on here message bills, but what, you just try to push those to the side?
You know, it's funny. there are things that happen in the legislature we don't even know about because our tunnel vision is so focused on what's impacting counties. And so there have been sessions where I've gotten to the end and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know about that terrible bill, you know, in the social arena. So while we're aware of some of these, we don't tend to follow them just because it's impossible to weigh in on everything. And we have our hands full just trying to protect our own things around land use decision making and how we run our elections and how we collect taxes and what's happening in public health and that type of thing.
Yeah. And we're going to run through some of these bills, but we hear so much about the affordability and cost of living. And I don't know, you hear anything about minimum wage, paying living wages, things like that, right, that would help with the affordability issue?
Yeah, they tend to focus more on cutting taxes. I know there's another bill out around cutting the income tax and also tying that to revenues and the economic situation of the state. So every year, I think you'll see it kind of go up and down. We also know they're looking at the property tax as a way to address affordability and really increase the primary residential exemption. So this is where right now 45% of the value of your home is not considered when they're calculating taxes. They're looking to increase that to 60% only for primary residents. So that's another way they're looking at trying to make things more affordable. I haven't heard much discussion around wages.
Yeah. Now, is that House Bill 161 that you're kind of referring to?
Yeah. And in order to do that, it would actually require a constitutional change. So there is also a resolution, HJR 7, that would put that on the ballot. So if voters choose to change the Constitution, then this bill would go through, assuming it passed. And so that could definitely help our homeowners who are residents and, you know, primary residents. What's interesting, though, about the impacts of that bill is from a taxing entity perspective, like the county, the way it works in Utah is we're guaranteed the same amount of revenues every year in property taxes, regardless if there's inflation or a recession, unless we can account for new growth or we go through the truth in taxation process and increase our revenues from property taxes. So what this means is if we're increasing that exemption on the residential side, it's going to shift then some of that tax burden to the commercial sector or to second homes. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out here.
Yeah, it's a balloon. You squeeze one place and it's going to bulge out another way. And again, and second homeowners don't have a vote.
Right, right.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, let's talk about some of the local land use revisions that you're aware of. And again, these are the kind of the scary things that we seem to see pop up like in the last week of the session and just take Park City and Summit County so unaware.
Yeah, so what's concerning about some of the bills we're seeing right now is they haven't gone through the land use task force. This was a working group that has been in existence for many sessions now, where the idea is we don't want surprises. Let's not have land use bills come out of nowhere at the end of the session. So it's a group with representatives from all interests around this issue. So it includes cities, it includes counties, but it also includes developers and the Home Builders Association and the Property Rights Coalition and folks that tend to be on opposite sides on this issue. And so the plan is bills are supposed to go to this group. They work it out, come to some consensus, and then that goes through the process. So occasionally there are bills that get introduced that skip that process, and HB 184 is one of those. This is Representative Ward's bill called Land Use Revisions, and it's concerning to us because I think, again, under the affordability question, they're trying to help facilitate the development of starter homes. You might be aware of Governor Cox's goal of 35,000 starter homes by the end of 2028. And so the idea of the premise of this bill is to allow a change in zoning without going through the public hearing process, specifically for starter homes, which they're defining as homes sold for the area mean purchase price. So essentially, if a county legislative body does not deny the rezone request within 30 days and explains its reasoning why, then it becomes the de facto land use regulation for that specific project, but again, without going through the Planning Commission process or holding any public hearings. So obviously that's concerning to us. There's a reason why there's process set into these decisions. It's also why there's public transparency around it. So in addition to some of the legal challenges we have with the bill, there's also some very strict deadlines in there that are really impractical for us to achieve. In addition, from just the technical side of this, we also don't feel like this approach would actually get the results that they're hoping to on a policy level. Because if you look at our community where we have such a high cost of living, area mean purchase price is way too high for any young families or new homeowners. So it won't actually result in anyone being able to afford those units.
Hmm. And again, it's just taken away decision-making process from the local governments.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what local governments are designed for. We elect our representatives to represent us here in our town, but yet now legislature seems to be saying no.
Yeah.
That's a whole other topic, yeah.
And I would agree with that. I mean, I think we can agree with the governor and with the legislature that affordability is a problem. We have been working on trying to address this locally, and the city has as well for many, many years. Where we don't agree, though, is removing that local decision-making, because we believe local officials understand better the unique community needs, history, climate, infrastructure, and so they can lead to more appropriate development. Additionally, as a public entity, the community's interest is our primary responsibility. It's not profit, right? And so we're ensuring that what gets built and where it is built is safe and benefits the community. So we definitely disagree with that approach.
Okay, what are some of the other bills with regard to land use that you're concerned about?
Yeah, so we're hearing, again, on this conversation, I don't know if this will resurface this year, but last session there was a bill to create the Beehive Development Agency, and this essentially would have given state preemption over land use decisions. So for instance, if a developer didn't get approval locally, they could then go to this state body and get approval for their project, and just totally usurping that local process. Well, fortunately, there was enough opposition to that among a bunch of stakeholders, but certainly legislators, before the bill moved too far that session. So we're thinking it might come back this session. That's obviously our fear, maybe albeit in a scaled down version. And again, the reason why we believe this is because of comments that are coming out of the governor's office and the legislature about wanting to get more aggressive in their approach to increasing housing supply that could involve state preemption. So we'll have to see if that happens. Of course, we just don't agree with the supply approach, because here in Summit County, without deed restricting those units, again, they're not going to go to Utahns. They're going to be investment properties or short-term rentals or second homes.
Yeah, and I'm thinking maybe we just heard about perhaps a development in Browns Canyon involving thousands of units. We also have the West Hills Incorporated. I mean, this could impact both of those developments?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
Okay. What else?
So one bill we're really excited about that I want to make sure I share, because it's not all bad news, right, is HB 190. This is the Child Care Business Tax Credit. It's actually been a bill that we've been working proactively on with the Park City Community Foundation's Early Childhood Alliance and Park City Municipal, as well as some colleagues at the Policy Project. We approached Representative Thompson to help with this because he introduced a bill last session to provide a tax credit to businesses who offered, either constructed or expanded child care facilities for their employees. So an opportunity came about in the Big Beautiful Bill at the federal level that offered up to a 50% tax credit to businesses who provided some child care benefit to their employees. And so we approached Representative Thompson about trying to mirror that here at the state level. And so again, to recap, last legislative session, they passed two tax credits, 20% for qualified child care construction or expansion costs for businesses, and then a 10% credit for ongoing employer-paid child care expenses. Again, those credits mirrored some existing federal incentives, and it was a great first step, but it didn't really address the problem entirely. So HB 190 is designed to align the federal incentives and maximize participation in that program by expanding it beyond just building facilities, but even if an employer were to contract with a child care provider, then they could also be eligible for these tax credits, up to 80% of a tax credit for qualified child care expenses paid on behalf of an employee. What we love about this approach is, as you know, we've partnered with Park City to expand their child care scholarship program, which has been a huge success. And each time I go to the county council trying to get more money for that, there's always this conversation of, well, what is the state doing? What are employers doing? And so it's not just something local government takes on entirely on its own. And so this bill does that. It involves the state with the tax credit, and it involves employers who probably want to provide some type of benefit for their employees but don't have the means to do it. And so there's a specific focus in this bill on small businesses and trying to give them some incentives to support their employees in this way.
Okay, with just a few minutes left, let's hit on some of the restoring representative government. What are you watching here?
So I think what might be most of interest to your listeners are what's going on around the referendum process. So there's a number of bills, HB 74, 32, 167, 242, and 160, that are all related to the signature gathering and verification process for when citizens want to put an initiative on the ballot or overturn a decision that was made by a legislative body through the referenda process. All of these bills either clarify that process or make it more restrictive. As you know, we had experience with this last year with the Dakota Pacific referendum process, and there was some confusion about what was considered an eligible signature and the process for removing signatures. And so there are some bills that are looking at that, I think, again, because of Summit County's experience, to try to clarify that process. And then, like I mentioned, I think there are some that will add additional hurdles. So that's something that I would encourage our residents to follow.
And with regard to some of the infrastructure bills, there is one, an update with regard to the Utah Renewable Communities. Anything there to report?
Yeah, so there's about 19 communities across the state that are involved in this coalition that have been working since 2019 to secure 100% net renewable energy for our communities. Park City's part of that, Summit County's part of that. And so we're finally, after all these years, making really great progress in that front. We were just before the Public Service Commission trying to get approvals. And so our concern only with the legislature is we don't want any energy-related bills that might come about to impact that progress or interfere with what we've been doing again since 2019. So we'll be following very closely the energy legislation working its way through the bodies.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about this Title 17 recodification process.
So Title 17 in the state code is the code that pertains to counties. And so it was a big lift last session to do a lot of updates and recodify that title, most of it cleanup and technical, not really a lot of substantive changes. But now counties are required to respond to those changes with our own local ordinances and planning documents and notices and administrative processes. So we'll have to look at all the changes that happened during the special session in October to understand what we need to do locally. We do expect additional action on this in 2026. Again, we're being told just in the form of cleanup, technical amendments, and repeal of obsolete sections. But because it impacts counties very directly, we'll be watching that closely. I think there is one bill out that does this because it tends to be a group of bills. HB 38 is one of those, and we've been relying a lot on Utah Association of Counties to help guide that process.
Okay, and tell me a little bit more about Senate Bill 15.
So Senator Winterton is our senator. He has been tasked to focus on two issues around county form of government and county classifications. And so he has two bills out already, SB 15 and SB 28, doing that. So SB 15 is the form of government amendments. This would repeal existing restrictions on how counties can structure their governing bodies, specifically removing limits related to part-time or full-time county executives and legislative bodies, as well as, and I think the hope is it gives counties more flexibility if they want to approach a alternative form of government. So we'll have to see if that impacts us at all. There are also the classification bill. So counties are and cities are put into classifications based on their population. Right now, Summit County is a third class county, and there are a lot of references in state code to us being a third class county that allows us access to things like the emergency services sales tax. We just got the impacted communities tax and other things. And so we are always a little leery when we look at bills that change classification if in case it might change where we are. And this particular bill, I think, would make us a fourth class county, which might bring its own benefits, but also would impact likely some of the things we have because of those references and statutes. So we'll have to work with the senator to understand his intent there.
Okay. Well, Janet, you got your work cut out for you for the next 45 days. I appreciate you coming
Absolutely.
In. Hopefully we'll check in with you periodically just to find out where things stand.
Certainly. Always happy to come on and talk legislature.
Especially on a holiday and your day off. I appreciate
right.
that as well.
No
That's
problem.
Deputy County Manager Jana Young. And again, stay tuned to KPCW because we have partnered once again with KUER Radio. They've got a couple of reporters there on Capitol Hill every day. We'll have updates Tuesday mornings at 8:30. Well, Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher, Youth Programs Director Heather Sims join me now in the studio. Good morning, ladies. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Let's see. Heather, let's start with you and talk a little bit about the after-school programs. These things are just really taking off.
Yep, we've had a phenomenal year so far, despite the lack of snow. But to date, we've had 2,458 kids do our programs, and 33% of those received scholarships or discounts. 605 of those are full scholarships, so those are students that are on free and reduced lunch. And then we've had 64 partial scholarships, so those are families that earn $120,000 or less, and they get a 50% discount. And thanks to our support from Kodiak, we've also been able to give 84 teacher discounts and first responder discounts. And those discounts are 50% as well. And then we've also been able to offer 47 sibling tickets. So we are very grateful to Kodiak for helping us with our sponsorship of those discounts.
Okay, explain that again. I mean, you're giving teachers? I mean, teachers aren't participating, are they?
Well, it's the teacher it's the teacher's sibling. Children, sorry.
Got
so
it.
On Friday afternoons here in Park City, those teachers are still working. And so their kids in the school come and participate in our program. And it's our way of thanking our teachers for helping us in the community.
Okay, you're in the thick of it with the January programs. What have you got going on?
Yeah, we've got, well, we've got everything on snow and ice except bobsled. We even had skeletons start this weekend, this coming weekend. We've had 1,450 kids actually participate this month. We're running 42 programs, 12 different sports, 17 venues, including 10 ski resorts. And thanks to our partnership with Ski Utah, we've been able to add Solitude, Snowbird, Snow Basin, Brighton, Powder Mountain, Sundance, and Solitude Nordic Center to our mix. And so we're very excited about working with these new resorts on the Wasatch Front.
Yeah, now those are the resorts that are taking care of kind of your Salt Lake City efforts?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. So we do still have some kids that are, some students that are coming up to Deer Valley and Park City. But these are new resorts to us for our programs, and they're offering 4-week programs just like we do here in Park City. And so it's very exciting. We've got kids from Ogden all the way down to Lehigh participating in our programs.
Whoa. Okay. Let's see. You wanted to mention also the scholarships or the equipment opportunities.
Yeah, so for those students that are on our free and reduced lunch program, we provide them with everything that they need, from boots to helmets, to gloves, mittens, but also we need equipment for those students. And so we've been able to give out 203 sets of equipment, 145 sets of equipment on the Wasatch back, and 58 on the Wasatch front, working with 9 stores. And honestly, Leslie, we could not do it without the help of those stores. They've been so great over the years helping those kids, and the store managers love it when they see those kids come in super excited and be able to offer those equipment. So
yeah, our future customers.
Exactly.
So how does that work? Do the kids like pick it up and get to keep it for 4 weeks?
Yes, that's exactly how it is. So we have stores like Switchback and Christie's that offer us about 50 sets for the full four or 5 weeks, and then we have stores like Kohl's, Jan's, Utah Ski and Golf, and Aloha that offer between 10 and 20 sets. And so, like I said, we can't do it without those stores, and so we are very grateful to them.
Yeah. Also, you're working with the National Ability Center as well, huh?
Yeah. So we have 4 students that the National Ability Center help with instructors. They provide that service for us for free. And so, again, we're super grateful. But it really allows us to be inclusive. We have 1 child at Park City Mountain that needs a sit ski. And we have 3 children over at Canyons who have different ranges of ability, from autism to hearing loss. So we're really, really grateful to them. This is a partnership that we've had for the last few years, and so it's a first come first serve basis, but to be able to see those smiling faces and those kids really having a chance to ski with their friends. The National Ability Center often does it on the weekend with parents, but I think it's a different dynamic when they're skiing with their friends.
All right. And you have how many schools participating now?
So it's a lot. So we have 27 on the Wasatch back, 12 in Wasatch, 3 South Summit, 2 North Summit, 9 PC-based, and homeschool. And then on the Wasatch front, we have 27 as well. And so, again, that ranges from schools in Ogden, schools in Murray, Lehigh, Wallace Stegner, Monticello schools. It's definitely a growing. People are finding out about us and, wanting to be part of the Youth Sports Alliance programs.
Yeah. So, Emily, do you have staff from Park City kind of managing the Salt Lake, or you have your own team down there?
Yeah, so this year has been a pilot program for a lot of those programs down in the Salt Lake area. And we did hire a Salt Lake program manager this summer, Camille Thompson. And Camille has been a great asset because she knows the community, knows the schools, and has been able to really jump right in there. So we do have staff sort of spread out or set up a Park City program manager, Wasatch program manager, who has a couple of people help her on program days, and then North Summit, South Summit. So we are definitely building that staff, but with the number of kids we're seeing and the number of families we're managing, it's necessary. So it's been great to see new staff jump right in there and make these programs happen.
Yeah, so we're talking Wasatch front, Wasatch back. Is it eventually going to get statewide?
Well, we'll see, right? I mean, I joke with the president of my board, Tor Calliver, that we're going global. But yes, I mean, we've gotten great support from area businesses, from the Salt Lake Valley, from Utah 2034, to look at how can we expand. We still firmly believe we have a plug-and-play model that can really work anywhere. So excited to see how that can grow, not just in winter sport, but in all sport.
Okay. And this is always, I want to just real quick, Heather, give you an opportunity to talk about any upcoming programs people can register for now.
Yep. We still have some programs coming up. We actually have, at the end of this month, we have a cross-country program. Hopefully we will get some more snow for that. And then in February, we have some free ski, freestyle programs, and Nordic jumping, and then just some regular programs. We've got tubing and some climbing programs. So just check out our website at ysausa.org and go to after school programs. Get out and play is our 1st through 5th. Activate is our 6th through 12th. And choose your region now to register.
Okay. It's always a fun time when we get to start naming the Park City Nation with an Olympic year. Emily, you've kind of in the process of naming that nation. Is that how it works?
Yeah, so this is something that we love to track every 4 years, Park City Nation, Olympic and Paralympic athletes. And it really started in 2010 when we started tracking athletes that were either homegrown or hometown, so athletes who grew up here and trained with one of our seven partner clubs, or athletes that live here now because of the training opportunities. So we first started tracking them, and you know, it was something crazy, like Park City Nation would finish 10th in the medal count. In 2022, we were Park City Nation was 20% of Team USA. So we love to start just tracking all of these athletes. In 2022, we were hoping to have our first Get Out and Play alumni named to an Olympic team, but we actually had three. So Casey Dawson in long track speed skating, where he won a bronze medal in the team pursuit. Ashley Farquharson in women's luge, where she was the top women's finisher, and Jared Schumate in men's Nordic combined. We think we are going to top that. It's not official, but we think we're going to have four or five athletes who came out of Get Out and Play for this Olympics. So just exciting to start tracking all of those athletes. And it's tricky because we are literally probably hours and days away from knowing exactly who's going to be going to the Olympics and who isn't. That's definitely a very official process, and we don't want to jump the gun on anybody who hasn't been officially named.
Okay. Well, we'll kind of talk about that next month, after the Olympics have been.
Yeah, so we do have 15 athletes that are part of Park City Nation. It's obviously, as I said, going to jump when the Olympic and Paralympic athletes are named. But just quick shout out, some of these are competing for the U.S. and some are competing for other nations. So Zoe Atkin, free ski, half pipe, Casey Dawson again, speed skating, Ashley Farquharson, women's luge, Kaylee Kuhn, aerials, Nick Page, moguls, Winter Vanecki, aerials. Matt Greiner is officially part of Park City Nation. He came out of Get Out and Play and is a Stein Erickson Scholarship recipient. Troy Polomisak, Winston Tang, alpine skiing, and Alex Hall, free skiing. So very exciting.
Yeah, very impressive. And finally, you do have, people have been asking about this on social media, about discount lift tickets, and you do have some?
Yes, so part of our Vail Epic Promise grant, they give us a big stack of tickets that we can sell. They're discounted lift tickets for Park City Mountain, Canyonside, and Park City Side. They're available at Hotel Thanes and Jan's Park Avenue store. So if you walk in, you can buy lift tickets. They're $177 direct to lift, and there are no blackout dates. So if you have people coming into town and you're blacked out, or they have not purchased lift tickets yet, oftentimes it is a discount from what is at the window. So they can go to either Hotel Thanes, which is newly rebranded Peaks Hotel, and or Jan's Park City, and go direct to lift. And that money goes 100% back to the Youth Sports Alliance. So if you want to support any of our programs, any of our athletes, you can do it by buying those lift tickets.
Yeah, so what does that raise for you?
It raises a significant amount of money. So it is, you know, it was a little bit slow to start. So we will see a lot more of those advertising rolling in the next couple of weeks and months to make sure that we sell all of those.
Okay. Emily Fisher, Heather Sims, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On the phone with an update from the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, I have Executive Director Robert Parrish, who started the job just last month. Good morning, Robert, and thank you for calling in on your day off. I appreciate it.
Good morning. You're very welcome. Happy to be here.
Okay. Let's first just start. You know, Basin Rec has stopped grooming. There's no snow to groom. So any challenges with a lack of snow? Maybe talk a little bit about the pros and cons of a big snow year versus a low snow year?
Well, the pros are that we don't have to do the grooming, which saves us on the cost of the maintenance and the wear and tear in the machinery. But, you know, the cons are is that, you know, our residents aren't able to use the trails and the open space during the winter and really enjoy those type of winter sports. So it's,
Our trail grooming's been minimal. Our crew reported that this past Friday was probably going to be the last day that we were able to groom. As you know, it's been reported Utah statewide has seen minimal snowpack this year. So it really does affect everything, more so than just the downhill skiing.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at some of the projects that you're working on for 2026. What do you got going?
So a couple big things that we have going is that we are going to take the Trailside Skate Park and convert it into the Trailside Wheels Park with a little bit of an expansion. We're going to start the design process with community engagement and input coming very soon. And what this will allow us to do is to take this skate park, which traditionally, as they've been developed in the past, have been really kind of focused just on skateboarders and inline skaters. But by converting to a wheels park, we're really going for an inclusive and accessible type of environment. So not only will skateboarders and rollerbladers be able to use it, but kids on bicycles, and there will even be elements that are accessible for people in wheelchairs who or other mobility devices. And it'll add some square footage to it. We'll put in a pump track. So it really is more multi-use, but it's multi-generational. I myself have been in several cities where they have wheels parks for bikes and have enjoyed riding through the obstacles in the terrain. So we're hoping to expand access to the community for that. Also at Trailside will begin replacing the Lower Park campground later this spring and in the summer. The equipment itself has aged and has some hazards to it, so we will be replacing that. But that also will have an element of accessibility and universal access. So there will be elements of the playground for children who have mobility issues that will make it more inclusive for all members of the community to be able to use.
Okay, I wanted to ask
we're also going to start some work on the East Canyon Creek Trailhead to get that going. And then we also have on the calendar for this year also is that we'll still be continuing to work on the High Ute Trail.
Okay.
So those are some of the major things we have going there this year as far as capital projects that were planned and will be executed this year.
Okay, back to the skate parks. Are those uses separated, though? I mean, you can't be having bicycles and wheelchairs in the same place, or can you?
Well, you can, because it's a circuit track. So there are elements that, as it's designed, that, you know, it'll be obvious if somebody else is on there, but it has different stations and different uses. So it's not like you think of typically like a track where, you know, everybody gets on, everybody's going the same direction. The challenge elements that are in there, it'll be fairly evident. The pump track itself is one way, and you know, if you're on one end and somebody else is on there, you're gonna know that somebody's there. So no, we're definitely not gonna create a hazard by having a whole bunch of people going willy-nilly through the course. But it's set up such that, you know, a bicyclist could be on one challenging feature that's there, while somebody who is in a wheelchair or a scooter or a small child on a BMX, little on a bicycle or a bike with training wheels, can be in another element.
All right.
And that's the other part of that as well, is that there will be some flat areas. So kids who are learning to ride will have the ability to do so. The bigger idea of the whole entire wheels park is that it's progressively more and more challenging. So kids and even adults can start with some of the features that are basically at the beginner level. And then as their confidence grows and their skills grow, they can explore more of the features within the park. The features become more and more progressively challenging.
Without the full tax increase approved, you're asking for 20%, got a 5%. What doesn't happen this year?
Well, we were asking for 15% and we got 5%. The biggest thing, well, and at this point, because the winter, you know, we kind of cut a break because, you know, we're not having to spend as much on operational costs. But it would be one of those things that we would definitely have to make hard choices in out years as to operationally what we can support. I am always going to make sure that we're putting the investment into the assets that we have. That's our buildings and all the other things we need. We need to maintain them, because when we stop maintaining, they start incurring deferred maintenance. We start having more breakdowns and damages occur because of weather. So we need to make sure that. So, you know, what we really looked for within that, we were looking for five full-time employees, a couple for parks and recreation. We were looking for somebody for to manage our IT services. We were also looking for an accountant. So the biggest thing we're not going to be able to do is to hire all of those employees. I did manage to, in my conversation with the county council, that, you know, the IT person, the IT manager, and our accountant are two critical elements to our operations. With the reliance on software systems and information systems as a modern organization, we need somebody to help us manage our data systems, particularly in light of several state laws that have been passed about how we, Basin Recreation as a government entity, must maintain certain records. We also have to ensure data privacy. So we really do need an IT professional to help us with that. And then the accounting person, we've been getting along with a part-time person for right now, but as Basin has grown and as we're doing more business, we have more accounts payable, more accounts receivable. We really do need help in processing the business of Basin Recreation. So instead of hiring five people, I'll only be able to hire two.
All right. Let's get an update on the Klein-Dolly project. If approved, and if it gets approved, how does it get paid for?
Well, the update is we're kind of in hurry up and wait. I mean, this is one of those chickens that I wouldn't want to count until the egg hatches. I know there's still a lot of work, and there's some work going on between the developer and the county. But until I hear that it's a go, it's not. But we are doing work in the background, I mean, because we don't want to be caught flat-footed. If we have that project move forward, we will be planning for coming to the voters in November for a bond. We really do not have the capital sitting around waiting to be invested in a project of that size, particularly knowing what we would want it to be. We know we've had some community feedback in the past that we're looking for a swim center, maybe some more indoor field space. But we'll go into that, and we've already, we've hired a firm to begin putting together some of our bonding materials, which would also include, as we get forth, once we know that this is a go, we'll start public input sessions, listening sessions to figure out what the people want, but expect to see a bond on the ballot come November.
Yeah, and when will we see actually specific plans for the parcel? When does that show up at a planning commission?
It would be several years. Because as we go through, if the bond is approved, really we only have enough money to do kind of this pre-bond listening session. Once the bond is approved, we start collecting on that. We'll be able to hire an architect and engineering firm to start working on the design. So, you know, you're looking at anywhere from 12 to 18 months before we actually have a final design that we can even share with community. We will have some concepts that we can share as part of our listening sessions leading up to the bond, but we won't have an actual complete design.
Okay, real quick, I got just a minute here. Maybe you want to highlight a couple of programs or new class offerings?
Yes, so the big thing is we just recently had some success. We collaborated with City League to deliver a new successful winter youth basketball program. So instead of using volunteer coaches and referees, we contracted with City League, where they provided basically professional coaching and professional referee to help us with that. And that was very successful. We're going to be looking at expanding that contract into other types of sports. We also have some adult basketball and soccer leagues starting up, along with pickleball clinics. We also have Strider Bike program for young participants. So we're, you know, very excited to offer our popular February break camp that's coming up as the kids are out of school. And, you know, we're, for all of our programs, we definitely encourage our residents, particularly parents, to register early for the programs that are geared towards youth.
Okay, Robert, I got to leave it there, but we'll talk to you next month. Thanks again for your taking the time off.
Thank you very much. You all have a good morning.
Robert Parrish is the executive director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District.